Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, recorded live on blogtalkradio.com on July 25th, 2008. I've said it before and I'll say it again. Chip Rowe has one of the greatest jobs on earth. He's the Playboy advisor. You know, the guy who gets letters from CJ in Chicago that begin, "What is the proper way to tip a blackjack dealer?" Or maybe this automotive inquiry from AK in Harrisburg, Virginia. "Ever since I was a child, I've fixated on women in cars that won't start. I suppose you could call this a fetish because it gets me incredibly turned on. Have you ever heard of such a thing?" Well, in his first published collection, Dear Playboy Advisor, Questions from Men and Women to the Advice Column of Playboy Magazine, Chip has whole chapters devoted to everything from affairs and anal to swingers and threesomes. So, I'll only say this once. If you're under 18 or easily offended, please stop listening now. For those of you remaining, please welcome Chip Rowe, the Playboy Advisor, to Mr. Media. Hey, Chip.
Hi. So now
How
there's
you doing?
Only two listeners left.
You know, I thought about saying that, but I was afraid I might be right, you know.
You know, my mother-in-law picked up this book, and it happened to fall open. She was, you know, congratulating me, and it opened to the anal chapter, and she put it down. So I said, there's a lot of other things in there, you know, to read about.
And she probably thought, no, thank you, son.
Yeah, that's okay.
I think
all
I've
I needed
enough.
To know.
So, Chip,
so how are you? It's been 10 years now. I can't believe it.
I know. And you know what's funny? I looked, and the first time that I interviewed you, it was published on July 14th, 1997. So almost to the day, 11 years, actually.
Yeah, I didn't know anything then. I really didn't. I didn't know what I was talking about.
Really?
Well, it's funny because when I was doing the book, you know, I went through 14 years of questions, or at the time, yeah, 14 years, and I organized them into the 44 chapters, you know, by theme. And I would read some of those early letters from the first 3 or 4 years I was doing the column, and I would think, God, what a stupid answer. And just between me and you, I'd rewrite the answer. You know, I had a chance, I would rewrite the answer. And it was also interesting to... because I know you read the column, you know, a lot of people will write in and say I'm wrong or disagree, and you have to kind of wait 3 months. 3 months later, I have to put in the beginning of their letters often, kind of remind people what we're talking about. But in the book, I could put them in order, and it was really interesting to kind of see the original letter, my response, and then all these people responding to my response, and then me responding to them. It looked much more like a forum, a discussion group like you'd see on the internet. And I started to think that the advisor, really before the forums and discussions that you see online got started, really was that kind of thing where people felt and still feel that they can write in and disagree with me, and it's a discussion much more than me on a mountaintop. And it's very interesting to me, and I've learned so much just from people writing in about their experiences in the wide world of sexuality. And the things that they've done, and some of the arguments you have. And, you know, of course, as we discussed 10 years ago, I'm sure the questions that are common are the same as they were then. And, you know, I'm only seeing now, I think there's a lot of more internet-related questions, or that's kind of changed the dating scene in the last decade, how people are meeting. But other than that, it's pretty much the same insecurities and the same deficit of desire is obviously one of the biggest ones where, you know, one partner, sometimes the woman, but mostly the man, wants sex more often. And I am getting more letters now from women, though, who aren't getting as much sex as they want. And the guy, for some reason, won't is just not interested, and they're only having sex once a week or once a month. And
I
actually had to say, "What's that?
Do you have phone yeah, numbers?"
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I know. And they just—the women often describe themselves, and they're, you know, they sound like total hotties, and you're kind of like, "What's up?" And I actually had to say in the column to a woman who wrote in, she's in her 20s, and said, "My boyfriend of a year doesn't want to have sex with me anymore." And all my girlfriends who I talk to say the same things about their boyfriends. And I had to actually tell her, "I don't believe you. I don't believe you. You know, are these guys working three shifts? Are they depressed? I mean, what's going on?" And I made a call out to the readers, the men, just tell me why they were not interested. And I got a lot of letters from men kind of explaining. And it was often depression, stress, or the wife had gained a lot. They weren't attracted to her anymore. She'd gained a lot of weight. Or they were bored with the relationship. So it was very interesting and to kind of get that kind of feedback. And that's what I've always loved about doing the column.
Well, it's a fun read. And I was going to ask you, you mentioned about a dialogue. I've been reading, I'm 47, I'll be 48 soon. I have literally been reading Playboy one way or another since I was like 12, maybe 11. I don't know, because I would find them. I remember finding them. My dad had an old box of them in the attic, and I found them on top of an old cedar chest.
Dads are so horrible at hiding Playboys because you hear.
Yeah, I don't think they try
time.
That hard.
You know, they don't try that hard. You know, they're under the socks. I mean, come on.
Right. Well, and then I remember being able to actually buy them at the newsstand, which you couldn't now. When I was like 13. I would buy my stack of comics, and I would slip in, you know, Playboy or something.
Sure.
And nobody blinked at it then. Anyway, so I've been reading The Advisor. I would say more interested in it, you know, once I was like 16 or 17. I don't remember until maybe the last, 7 or 8 years, that it being as much of a dialogue as it is now. And it really is.
Yeah, I mean, that was one thing that I brought to it. That my predecessor hadn't done as much, and I think it reflects my growing up in the computer culture where he hadn't, and also I just think it's interesting. I guess I never took it personally, and I find it very interesting when people disagree with me. There was a letter in the August issue or the July issue where, you know, a guy said he was at a party and one of his girlfriend's ex-boyfriend came up and said, you know, I used to do your girlfriend. And the guy wanted to know what to say to that. And I just said, you know, the advisor's response was, you don't say anything. The conversation's over. I mean, you just walk away. What are you going to say to that? And so all these people wrote, you know, like, that's the lamest response. You just obviously don't know what you're talking about. And I would have said, you know, and they had all these one-liners that were kind of crude and basically stupid. All of them were stupid. And they sort of missed the point of the answer, which was you're not going to engage a guy who's obviously an ass and prove that you're an ass, you know. And you're just not going to do that because it's going to become a your mother's so ugly kind of competition. And you're basically going to prove to your girlfriend that she still has no taste in men.
Yeah.
But they didn't quite get that. So, but I'm happy to print those responses so that I can have the last word. That's the end of the discussion. And I always kind of get the last word. But I think that makes it a much more interesting column for people. And I still get 500 letters a month, mostly email now. And I answer each one personally. So I send a personal response to each person. I spent the whole day today, in fact, trying to catch up. And I think that encourages people to write, and certainly there's not a lot of sources for sexuality information from other people. I mean, there's certainly websites, but they're kind of, you know, they're swinger sites, or they're totally devoted to sex, and they're not kind of question answer from other people, what's your experience? So that's kind of what I'm hoping to do, and people love to talk about it, and people do crazy things that I find fascinating. And each month I think it's going to be, I have this little insecurity, you know, as I sit down to kind of compose the column or choose the letters out of those 500 that are going to go in, that I'm not going to find anything I haven't answered already. And it hasn't happened yet. I mean, there's somebody will write in with something that never shocks me, but I'm just like, unbelievable. Like the person, there's a letter coming up a guy wrote in and said his girlfriend asked him to rub her eye, and he rubbed her eye and she had an orgasm. And he wanted to know if I'd ever heard of that. You know, they always want to know, is that normal? And, you know, it's unusual, I say. It's not abnormal, but unusual. And you know, have I ever heard of that? And in fact, I had not heard of that. But nothing surprises me, having read all the studies and knowing about female sexual response. I mean, scientists have found women who can have orgasms by having their elbows rubbed, the lower part of their back, their hair, their nose. Because they have to have childbirth.
Mm-hmm.
They get to have the easy orgasms, and we just have. But maybe we're just not. Men aren't looking closely enough. Mm-hmm. Like maybe if I did rub my elbow for 3 days, they would turn me on. But
well, I'll tell you what. It's the beginning of the long weekend. It's the beginning of the weekend. If you'd like to try now, I'd be happy to check in with you on Monday.
Calluses. You know. Yeah, I mean, it is amazing. You know, I've been writing a series of articles about male sexual development over the last couple of years in the magazine, and it's just amazing the science. We are basically huge orgasm machines. The drive to reproduce is so strong that, you know, nature doesn't care if you're in love, not in love, married, single. It just wants you to make babies.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that it's discounted by a lot of people. But, you know, as a man, I mean, I think about sex constantly. I joke that, you know, walking to work the 20 blocks from the train to Playboy's offices, I have sex in my head with like 800 women. You know, because you're like, oh, you know.
But Chip, look at the women you're going to see from the train.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's Fifth Avenue. But I just think I'd like to have a light switch on the side of my hip that I could just, when I needed to concentrate, so I don't get hit by a car, or I would just flip it off, and you know the libido would shut off for a little while, and I'd have some deep conversations and things like that. But because it is something that is hard to explain, and you see this in the letters that come in, men are so frustrated that they want to have sex every day with their wife, even after years. I know I do. I mean, I've been married 12 years, and I still find my wife totally hot, and you know, and maybe that's just because I'm writing porn all day, but you know, I get home every night steamed up, and she rolls her eyes, But I think it's hard to explain to someone who, you know, the constant in the back of your head, and I talked to a scientist at one point for the series at the a government scientist who is doing brain scans on children. They started at age 12 or pre-puberty, and every year they did a brain scan, kind of map the changes in the adolescent brain, which are major. I mean, they're finding, you know, major changes. And he said to me that it's interesting with a 12-year-old boy, about 12 and a half years, you can totally see the change in every decision he makes after puberty hits him is decided by, am I going to get laid? Will I get laid if I do that? Whereas before that, it's not part of his, you know, he's kind of confused. He feels attracted to women, but he's not sure why. He's got a crush on his teacher. But at 13, he's like, is this going to, if I say this to her, will it get me laid and so forth? And I have noticed that, like, I'll be doing the dishes, and you tell me if this is part of your experience as well. I'll be doing the dishes at night, and, you know, I'm contributing. I have three little kids, and it's a hectic household, and try to contribute to the upkeep of the household by doing the dishes and doing my share. But I'm not thinking as I'm doing the dishes, boy, this is great. We have a wonderful family, and, you know, it's very egalitarian and all that. I'm thinking, I wonder if my wife will notice and have sex with me.
Of course.
Honest to God. I mean, that's a thought. It's fleeting. It's fleeting. Well, but I think most men, if they stop and think about it, there's a lot of they're motivated often by the fact they're trying to impress their spouse.
But
and women don't quite get it. You know, they don't have that same – most women, this is obviously a generalization.
Yeah.
But I don't think women – in general have that same drive in their head constantly.
Isn't the sad thing, though, that we start having that thought at 13, and at 23, for all the times we've asked ourselves that, The answer has been, 99% of the time, the answer, it comes back no. At 33, we're still asking ourselves the same question based on everything we do. Will this tie get me laid? Will this little move get me laid? We're at 43, which I've passed now since we've last spoke. I'm still thinking the same thing. And I know that the answer is no, you idiot. Move on to something else.
I noticed when
I was 13, 15, I would think about sex, I think, what is it, like every 8 seconds? I think
it's probably
about every 12 to 15
seconds.
Yeah,
it does slow down, but you're losing 1% of your testosterone a year, basically, on average, from the time you're 18 to 80. And so you do, I'm 41, and I've noticed the same thing. I don't think about it as often. I'm not as driven. But I'm still driven, and I'm still after it, and constantly kind of in the back of my head thinking about it. And I think what's interesting, and the men who write in with this deficit of desire issue, where they want to have more sex and their wife is just over it or not as much, doesn't want it as much, is that women don't think about the fact that what it is like as a man to hear no constantly. You're constantly rejected. I mean, that's something you deal with from a teenage years, when you're expected as the man to make the first move and ask the women out and reach over to kiss and, do all that stuff and know about sex and so forth. But you are hearing no constantly, and it hurts. I mean, especially when you're married, and we make this idea that I've committed to one woman for the rest of my life, and I'm saying I'm going to have sex with only you for the rest of my life. I'm going to maybe think about it about everybody else, but I'm committed to you. And then to have that one person say no, right, to reject you, that's really harsh. And if you're getting that a lot, you can understand the frustration when guys write in and they're like, what can I say to her? They want me to give them a magic pill. What can I say to her? What can I do? And I get 50 sex books a week. And there's only been one, The Sex Starved Marriage, it's called, which I recommend anybody having this issue. And only one that where the therapist who wrote it, Michelle Wiener Davis, acknowledged that, said in there, if you're the low desire spouse, you need to understand, and you're a woman, you need to understand that the man, what he's hearing from you when he hears no, and men hear no constantly because they ask all the time. But it's just an issue that I think help, I try to tell people to read it, try to get both spouses to read the book, because obviously if the woman or the man, whoever's the low desire, has written it off as not important to the marriage, then there's big trouble. Because, I've got people now writing me after I always tell people when they write, if they're cheating, that's not the solution to anything. You gotta, you made a commitment, you gotta stick with it or leave. And I get people then right frustrated saying, well, my wife says she doesn't want sex anymore, so what are my choices? I either live in a sexless marriage, I get divorced, or I cheat. And that's very stark and tells me that they're not, you've got somebody who isn't willing to discuss the issue. That is a big problem, and it certainly can't be the only problem in the marriage, if that's the communication level, right, where the lower desire spouse says, well, forget it, this isn't important to me, so it's not important to us. That doesn't work. And I always suspect there's bigger problems in the marriage if the lower desire spouse isn't willing to kind of work out some kind of schedule, or it's sad to have to schedule it, but that's in the end what you do. You make dates. And she also points out in the book, which I think is a great point, that men and women are kind of wired differently, and sometimes it takes a woman 10 or 20 minutes to kind of warm up. Whereas a guy looks down and he's ready to go. And so she tells women, don't always just say no because you're not in the mood at that moment. Sometimes just say yes for the hell of it and see what happens. And the reaction she's gotten from people that she's counseled is that the women who do that then find that 10 or 20 minutes later they're totally turned on. And it's kind of exciting. It's, spontaneous and wild in the middle of the day, all this kind of stuff. And so sometimes it's just an idea of, we're conditioned to say, no, I've got other this stuff going on. But men aren't. Men are like, hey, why not? Why not? Mm-hmm. It's a great relaxation. It feels good. Men, masturbate from the time they're 12 as a way to relax and go to sleep and wake up. And, like I do it before every meal and then before between meals. And helps me sleep, helps me wake up, helps me concentrate, helps me not, But
yes, folks, we're talking to Chip Rowe here. Too much.
Did you have a question?
Too much information, man.
Don't get me started.
Way too much information, man. My goodness. Well, wait a minute. I want to ask you. I want to ask you this while we're on this particular subject. And you mentioned you're 41 now, so you're not as young as you were when you started as the advisor, or even when we last spoke in this situation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Have you changed as a sexual male, and how has your wife's attitude changed toward your job over the years? I mean, you said that you noticed that the things that you wrote 10 years ago that you would like to change, and I got to thinking, yeah, you know, and I bet you're maybe in writing the column, you may be a little less smug about certain things since you're older and you may see things differently, but at the same time, I'm kind of wondering how Mrs. Rowe sees her husband, who goes off and spends the day with porn magazines and maybe porn stars in the office and beautiful women, and you know, has any of that changed over the years?
Well, you know, when I started, I was 27. I think the answers that I changed were naive. I was engaged to be married at the time. I wasn't married. I didn't have any children. You know, and now I've been married. I have three children. I've been married 12 years. I just. When somebody writes in who's been married a while and has had even, and especially if they have young children and, you know, they're not having sex as often, that kind of thing. I mean, I relate to it, or I can relate to it much better than I could when I was 27 and basically single. So I think the world experience has helped. It gives me a better view of how men and women communicate. My wife has never had a problem with a column or what I do at Playboy. She, you know, knows that I'm committed to the marriage, and we joke about it. And I think we have a healthy marriage in the fact that many people who write me will be upset because they've been married for a year or two and their husband will look at somebody else, or he'll mention that he still kind of, you know, thinks about his ex sometimes and he misses her or whatever, just some kind of innocuous comment, and the spouse will go nuts. And to me, you know, you can't go into it with thinking that because you're married, now only you can turn this person on, and they're basically dead except to you. And so I think we have a healthy, you know, looking at that. She knows that, like, if she sees a hot guy, she'll say, boy, that guy's pretty good looking. And I'll say, well, go ahead, because you're not going to find better, honey. You know? He's probably stupid. You know? I mean, what can you say? And so it's fun. I think it's a sign of a healthy relationship when you can acknowledge that you're sexual beings and that marriage is very difficult. And that's why marriage is hard. That's why most, you know, nearly most people, close to half, eventually divorce, because it is hard to keep it interesting. And those are the letters I get, you know, too. After 10 years, people are like, well, I'm kind of bored. And that's where we talk about fantasy, and we talk about quickies and spontaneity, you know, and all these things that are in the book, and kind of the suggestions people have, how they keep it going. And studies, you know, they've looked at this now in the last couple of years, who stays together and who doesn't. And a very interesting study I wrote about 2 months ago that a guy at Stony Brook did, which was they looked at the brains of people who had been married 10 years, and they found that, you know, you'd expect that the brain, when they showed a photo of their spouse, that, you know, the brain wouldn't respond as if they'd been dating 6 months when you're falling in love and your dopamine levels have kicked in and all that and you're high. Mm-hmm. But they found that some couples were actually having the same reaction as somebody who was newly in love. And they couldn't figure it out. I mean, that's really strange if you think about it. After 10 years, you're still swooning over your husband or wife. But they found that those couples engaged in novel activities. And this is great advice for anyone who's kind of struggling with keeping the marriage fresh and keeping, you know, focused ahead instead of focused on the future, is that they would do things that together that they, you know, they'd go skiing if they'd never skied. They'd do things that they'd never done. Because the novelty of doing those things together is what drew them together. Instead of just going to the same place for dinner or doing the same activity every year, going to the same place to vacation or whatever, they would do things that neither of them had done or maybe had any special interest in before. And that was the key. That was what kept them going. And it comes out of studies where they've gotten people off roller coasters and had an attractive person ask them questions and found that the people getting off, the guys getting off the roller coaster were more interested in the interviewer than the people who weren't off roller coasters. You know, so the idea of the excitement keeps us interested.
Well, I just noticed that we're almost halfway through and I have neglected to tell listeners that we'd like to hear from them. So if you've got a question for Chip Rowe, the Playboy advisor, that's right, the Playboy advisor, and you want to ask anything from, oh, I don't know, threesomes to picking the right wine to go with fish.
Or both of those together.
You said that.
Your pre-orgy dinner. I can do that and then talk about the orgies and talk about dessert.
Give us a call, especially if you're listening live today, July 25th. Give us a call, 646-595-3135. I think you'll find that there's very little that will stop, that Chip will be stopped in his tracks over. And since you mentioned, I guess I mentioned threesomes first, but orgies. Let me ask you, I can't remember exactly what issue it was, but I did read it. Didn't, in the last year or so, didn't you write about swingers and that whole lifestyle?
Yeah, I got into the, I got into the lifestyle. I'm working on my wife. I figure when she's like 85, she'll agree to become a swinger. But I went to a couple of orgies in Chicago, and just because I'm curious about all that stuff, I find the subcultures of sexuality fascinating. And it was just an interesting experience. I mean, I'd never stood in a room surrounded by like 10 couples doing it in all different ways. These were hotel rooms. They had blocked off a floor of the hotel. And the funniest thing was walking down the hall, because usually it was a very special treat as the advisor to go, because usually you have to be in a couple to go, but I went by myself. My wife wanted to go out to the bars or something, so she wasn't going. But I walked down the hall, and you'd kind of look to the left and right, and you'd see little scenes in the rooms that had the doors open, which was an invitation to come in and watch if you wanted. And then I got to the end of the hall where there was sort of the group rooms, the suites, once on each side, and then it had a big sign that said smoking on the left and non-smokers on the right. So
that's great.
You'd walk into the non-smoking room and there was like somebody tied, you know, with their hands above their head getting spanked, and then a couple doing it over a chair next to you. And I started talking to this guy next to the bed. They had pushed like three double beds together for this big play area. And his wife was sitting on the bed topless, and I was just talking to him like they were where they're from and how they got into the lifestyle and all that. It was, you know, like at a cocktail party, except there was people having sex in the room. And his wife suddenly started making out with this other woman who stepped between us, you know, the two guys talking, to start making out with this woman. And I was like, you know, the guy's talking to me, but I'm watching them going, oh my gosh, that's really hot, you know. And he just kept talking. And I finally had to say to him, dude, like your wife is with another woman right there. He goes, oh, I've seen that. Like he was bored. He'd seen it before. And so that whole life, that was just stunning to me. And I think what was really the lesson out of that whole experience was that the eroticism of the scene was the fact that anything could happen. And right. I was turned on. I felt tingly because I knew that I could walk up to any woman there and say, would you go down on me? Would you have sex with me? And they wouldn't feel offended. They wouldn't slap me. They would just say yes or no. Mm-hmm. And if they said no, we could still have a conversation. And, you know, they didn't – it wasn't a – big deal. And I think that's what made it really arousing and exciting, much more than standing next to two people doing it, because it was just mechanical. You know, they were, it wasn't, you're just kind of standing there watching it. So that was a really interesting experience. And I'm really glad I met some of the swingers that I did. I remained friends with some of them for years. I still am friends with a lot of them. And they've helped me with a column when somebody writes in with, you know, kind of a lifestyle or swinger question. I can certainly read a book, but it's great to call them and say, what is this situation? You know, what would happen here? Does this happen? And so that, you know, I really admire kind of that attitude. A lot of people obviously condemn swinging as immoral and all this stuff, but in effect, it's removing sex from the marriage. You know, a lot of people have this huge issue with sex, but in effect, they're saying, well, we know who we're going home with at the end of the night, and we're interested in having sex with other people. So we can, you know, our relationship isn't going to be broken up by that. We're just going to have fun. And then we're going to also have sex with our friends because that's more fun. And those are the people we hang out with and go on vacation with. And why not? And so not that swingers don't get divorced or have problems, because some do, and it breaks up marriages and you don't want to, you know, but most of the people in the scene have been married 20 years or more. I mean, it's not newlyweds. It's people who are bored with their marriage, their, you know, sex lives. Sometimes the woman is bi-curious. That often happens. The woman wants to do it, and the guy's like, sure. And
yeah, right.
You know, like, he doesn't need much convincing, right?
Okay,
yeah. And so, you know, and it's different. There's different swinging scenes. Like the parties that I went to, where there's a lot of people in their 40s and 50s. You know, their body image, there wasn't a lot of, you know, they're not totally hot like you'd see in Playboy. But people don't have body image issues, and I didn't find that that was a criteria necessarily for choosing a partner, was their body image. It was more like friends. They were really great friends, and I don't know, it was just really interesting. And I don't know, you know, you think, you go to something like that, and you think, could I do that? Would that, psychologically, could I do that, or would it destroy my marriage, or would it be as disappointing to me? Is it only exciting because I can't do it? You know, that kind of thing. So you do think about all that, but I get a lot of threesome and swinger questions. People are really interested in it.
Well, I wanted to ask you, what was the most interesting question in your mailbag today?
Well, let me think. You know, it's a hard – I didn't really have anything that comes to mind. I know that's a lame response. And I'm also – I got to be honest, my mind is kind of swimming. I answered probably 100 emails today.
All right, well, let's
my mind is swimming. It's all, like, together. I can't remember which letter – which thing was from which letter.
All right, well, I'll let you – listen, Chip, I'll let you off the hook with that. But let's turn to a raging discussion in the magazine.
Okay.
I have the August 2008 issue in front of me with the lovely Ashley Harkelrode.
Yeah. Oh, man. Wow.
She looks a lot better than her name would make you think.
Yeah. She's great.
And so the raging discussion in the Playboy Advisor this issue starts this way, and they're referring to something that's already happened, but I am a 21-year-old woman who loves the Advisor. There has been some discussion about whether a man can, quote-unquote, slip into a woman's anus during doggy-style vaginal intercourse.
So now you're losing the last two listeners.
I know. I'm risking that. You notice I didn't start the interview with that.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
How bizarre. Now tell me, was there ever a conversation like this when Jim Peterson was doing the Advisor? I'm thinking probably not. I don't recall anything along this line.
Yeah, I don't know. Anal has been a big issue, a big topic in the last 5 years, and I'm not sure why. I am sure why. I know why. I mean, it shows up in pornography, and it's become the staple of pornography. It's, you know, the dirty thing to do, and the taboo of it. It's sort of wearing off now that you can see it in every single movie, and so then you get into other taboos, people pushing the envelope. But it's certainly it certainly comes up a lot in the letters to me. I try to discuss it once in a while because it's so popular and such a popular topic. And, you know, it comes up in the Playboy interview, for instance, with Dr. Drew. I don't know if you read that in July.
I did.
Where he says in the interview, you know, that people have anal sex, they should be careful because he's certain that there'll be a lot of 70 or 80-year-old women with problems.
Yeah.
You know, bowel problems and so forth. I don't know where he's getting that from. Everything I've read or everyone I've talked to who knows a lot about this doesn't think that's the case. And I got Tristan Taramino, who wrote The Ultimate Guide to Anal Sex for Women, which I recommend a lot, to kind of respond to Dr. Drew. You know, I asked her what if that was true, and she just said, you know, it's not true. And so... Those are the concerns that kind of come up but yet people, and I also wonder in that topic particularly, I think it's, you know, I don't know if it's where the interest is coming from. Is it men thinking that they see it in porn and they want to try it? Is it women who are interested or curious about it? Is it both? I don't know. But, you know, I try to answer it. I'm not judgmental, obviously. I'm not telling people it's wrong or right. I just try to give them information about it. And in that case, it was just interesting because it wasn't really the letter you just started reading wasn't really about anal sex. It's about a communication during sex because, the guy, the original letter, the guy claimed that he slipped and she was upset. And I said, well, you know, that's BS. I mean, you can't slip, you know, it doesn't work like that. Right. I mean, if you're going to start having anal sex, as Tristan says, since it's late, I'll say this, but she says you can't get to dick in one night. You have to work your way up. And, you start with small things and you work your way up over several sessions. It's not, you know, something you're just going to go at it like you would they see in porn movies. And that gives people the wrong idea. And I was very skeptical. And that's why you're seeing those letters where people saying it does happen, which is fine. I had no idea. And I'm happy to run the letters.
So how do the categories of questions break down these days? I mean, do you get more wine questions than anal sex questions, for example?
Oh, no. I mean, I get mostly sex questions.
Okay.
And Hef wants, ideally it would be 50-50 sex to non-sex, but I kind of – and he keeps reminding me every couple months he'll send me a memo and say, there's too much sex. I want it to be – because, Playboy's not a sex magazine. It has sex in it, but it's a lifestyle. There's lots of different stuff we cover, and so you want that kind of reflected in the advisor. Yet, I kind of don't do that. I mean, hopefully he's not listening. But I do it like 70-30, 65-35. I try – because that is the interest. That's what people write about. And I know people, when they tell me they read the column, they skip the non-sex questions. So I really – those are the harder ones for me to answer because I try to pick non-sex questions that are interesting – that I find interesting, that also are practical, that aren't too stupid or basic, but also aren't too esoteric. And so that's a difficult equation, to find something in the middle where, and I think a question such as, a lot of people have these flat screen TVs now, just how to clean fingerprints off that, what's the best way to do that, is a good question because most people probably don't know, and it applies to a lot of people who read the magazine. And so that's a kind of a good question, but generally, those are tough, and I do try to. So I try to mix it up, and I still get letters though from people who complain that they don't want to read those letters. Why do I include them? They don't understand the mix, But it's as I tell them, somebody who's only interested in sex isn't very interesting, right? I mean, you don't want to go to a party and talk to have a guy, talking about sex like this interview forever, going on and on about sex. But
I'm still concerned about what you said a minute or two ago, that you get notes from Hef that say too much sex. I'm thinking, wait a minute.
Yeah, no, well, I'm not saying his personal life.
No, I know.
No, I mean, he's just looking for a mix. He doesn't want it to be, 100%, hot letters kind of thing. That's just not,
right.
He just wants a balance, and he's not putting the hammer down. He's just sending little reminders and I haven't gotten one in a while, to be honest. So maybe I'm doing good with the balance. I think it also helps that I get like 35% of the letters I get are from women. And so you do get a lot of voices in there. And so and you also have to say, what is a sex question? I mean, if I get relationship questions or cheating questions or adultery kind of stuff, ethical or etiquette, it all is kind of a mishmash. And even a question about a stereo or an electronics question is a sex question because, again, the guy is always asking himself, will this new stereo get me laid?
Well, okay, I'll buy that. Well, let me ask you this. Do you guys keep the letters to the advisor on file?
No, I shred them all.
Oh, really?
I delete the emails. Mm-hmm.
I'm really sorry to hear that because I had a great question I wanted to ask you. Can I ask you the question?
You can ask me the question, yeah.
All right.
Sure.
So here's the question. I wondered if, for example, you're able to go back and see if a young John McCain or a young Barack Obama ever wrote in and asked, since Denver is a Mile High city, could my girlfriend and I join the Mile High Club if we screwed like crazy in a hotel room there?
You're pulling
so
up
you don't
the
have
classics,
those?
Man. Yeah. No, Barry Manilow wrote us. But that was published. And he later admitted it was B, you know, BM was him from Brooklyn.
BM.
He wrote in 65, yeah, unfortunate. He wrote in 65 and asked if he should try to have a career in music. And the advisor advised
sure.
him
I'd
to go for
it.
I've
never heard that one.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah. And so in an interview years later, he said, I wrote the advisor back in the 60s, and we had somebody dig it up, and there it was, you know, this letter. I'm
okay.
working at a restaurant. I want to be a musician, but I don't know if I should go for it. And the advisor was like, now or never, go for it.
Ah.
And so, but other than that, I've never, you know, obviously we don't save the letters for privacy reasons. I literally shred the snail mail, and then the emails, you know, I save the better ones, but most of them I just delete because it is interesting that people will write me and say I'm a cross-dresser, and they'll be from a tiny, tiny town in Missouri. And, you know, I think it's not a big deal. I change the small town to a big town. You know, if I run the letter in the magazine, I'm not interested in outing somebody because the question's really not, it's designed to help other people as well, and there's no point in embarrassing somebody. So, but it is kind of interesting the trust that they show, and I try to maintain that trust by just, you know, I just get rid of them.
Well, I'm kind of relieved to hear that because I do know that back in 1980, I wrote a letter.
I have that one, though.
Yeah,
that's on my door.
You know, it's
that's framed on my door. That was so weird. I'd never gotten it censored before. Didn't I call the authorities on that? Was that you or no?
That was Jim Peterson. You were probably in diapers then.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, you know that mile high question. The mile high question's funny because people write all the time trying to get into the club with these exceptions, and that was one of them. You know, and then they want to know, you know, if I don't know. They just have a lot of is a hand job on the plane, the same count, and you know, all this stuff. They want to know, like, I'm supposed to arbitrate this stuff, and I'm like, get what you can, you know.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, because they think that they're going to get a membership card in the mail if they can validate what they did.
Yeah, and all they're going to get is handcuffed, probably. You know, they're going to get in trouble. Yeah, and then we did. You know, somebody wrote and said, well, could you do the mile down club? I mean, is there somewhere to go a mile down? And so I researched that, and I was on the phone at one point with the head of the South African Mine Company, or, you know, the Bureau of Mines in South Africa, and we were figuring out which mine you could go down in that would be a mile down. But then he pointed out that it would be really hot. It would be really uncomfortable to have sex down there. And so that's what I love about my job, you know, like digging up the actual answer, because I'm not shy. I'll call and find out. You know, there's no question too dumb in that sense. Or the guy who wrote and said he wanted to know if somebody had ever been bitten on the penis by a piranha. So I found a guy in Brazil, a professor who had documented 30 years, he documented piranha attacks, and he'd had one in 1972 where a guy got bit on the penis. So I was able to reassure him.
Do you get hung up on a lot?
No, I think what happens mostly is people don't believe it. Like they take a message for whoever I'm calling for, and they're like, yeah, okay, sure. Sure, John, you know, they think it's a joke. And I have to say, look, I explain why I'm calling usually. I say I do the advice column, and I know he's an expert in piranhas, and, you know, I give the whole spiel because – but most people are very friendly. I do get, you know, occasional surprises. Some of the scientists I was interviewing for my series wouldn't talk to me, and they basically would say – you know, I had a couple who said outright – we don't agree with the magazine and, you know, you exploitive or whatever. But then I also got stuff like he'll never be available. I'd be like, when can I call back? He'll never be available. He's in a meeting until the end of time.
I was thinking about you this past week. There was a news report, and knowing I was going to talk to you, there was this news report. Tell me if you saw this about these pedicure fish. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I have no idea.
There was a photo in the newspaper. This was just this week, I think. And then there were reports, video reports of, and it's probably in Japan, knowing how these things run, but they have these fish that these women put their feet into these containers of water, and there are these fish that will eat away at the dead skin on the feet. And it's like a pedicure. And I thought, okay, I know somebody's going to write into you and ask if the fish would do that on other parts of the body. So I'm
probably,
surprised you didn't
yeah,
see that.
I wouldn't. And that, I have to admit, that letter would would make me pause for a minute. I would be like, wow, that's amazing. And I would be suspicious. I would be suspicious of that letter because I do get people trying to pull my chain. So I would suspect that somebody's trying to, you know, play a fast one until I Googled it.
Well, I was just going to say, while we're talking, I am going to find that story and I'm going to email it to you.
I'd appreciate it.
Has anyone found, in your letters, has anyone found a way to connect the Nintendo Wii to sexual misadventures yet?
No, I haven't gotten that, but I do get occasionally, maybe once a year, I get a letter from somebody who has discovered there's some manuals online that explain how you can hook up your stereo to your genitals. And then depending on what music you play, like classical is good. And then they have discussions of which music is most hot, you know, like classical is good because there's a lot of boom, 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 boom and rock and, you know, but it's not soft rock, this kind of stuff. So, but it's a little, it's dangerous because you never want to do it. My recollection is you never want to put the stuff above your waist because of the heart and stuff. So I didn't recommend it. And, but you know, that stuff's out there. That's about the closest I've gotten to video game hookups. But that's coming, you know. I mean, that'll be the next, probably in our lifetime, these real-life dolls will become animated, and you'll have people being attached emotionally and physically to a soft, you know, cyber skin being. I'm curious about it. I mean, I can't get away with it. I also don't have $5,000, but I would like to have sex with a real doll. I think that would be interesting. You know what a real doll, I mean, you've seen these real dolls. These they're like life-size women that model things that have like soft skin and warmth and all this kind of stuff. But they're very expensive, and there's been even a book of photos where a photographer took photos of guys and their real dolls. Treated it. You know, it gets into
that. I could live
with
that. But you know, I gotta tell you, I when you said about the music and stuff, I remembered seeing in your book you've got a letter from a car audio installer.
Oh yeah, the 33 megahertz, right?
Yeah. And so, you know, I know you've dealt with that. And by the way, keeping up on the interview, I want people to know I do my research. I'm really surprised that you missed that because unless I'm mistaken, you're still in Chicago area, aren't you?
No, I'm in New York.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were in Chicago.
Yeah.
Oh,
no,
well,
they
moved
the editorial offices to New York a few years ago.
I didn't realize that. I thought you were in Chicago.
Yeah.
I was going to tell you that on Wednesday, the Chicago Tribune, here's the story, pedicure fish, eat your scales and tell – and wait. Eat your scales and tell no tales. It sounds like a Playboy headline. So
now,
I'm going to
you know, as an armchair psychologist, I think that you are really asking this question. You want to know. This fascinates you, and you've had this thought. But your friend, you want to know for your friend, right?
My friend, that's right. Dear Playboy advisor, my friend has these strange experiences with fish.
Yeah, that's right.
Now there are
men who've written me because they want to get turned on by being bitten on their penises by bugs, but that's relatively common. I say relatively common. There's probably three guys, but they get turned. Well, one guy has the website and two other guys visit the website to talk on the forum, but they they go in the woods naked just so they can get bit there. And there's a name for it. And so that, you know, I get those letters, and I'm like, I get a foot fetish letter now, and I don't even, it just seems so normal. It's so common.
Well, isn't it wonderful that they found each other? That's all I got to say.
Yeah, I think, you know, I did get the most recent letter that kind of made me pause was the guy who said he was watching TV with his wife, and he looked over, and she had her finger up her nose, and he got an erection. And he wanted to know if that was, you know, they always ask, is that normal? And I'm like, yeah, it have every guy. Isn't that true with every guy? No, but I said to him, you know, it's obvious because she's being naughty. I mean, it's, you know, she's being naughty. I can't believe that he was in his 30s. You know, if you had a fetish for this, you would have known before now. It's just more you caught her. She's being a naughty girl and all that kind of stuff, I think, is what's going on. But then I went online and kind of thinking, well, maybe there's some, you know, I don't know. Let's see what if there's some kind of discussion of this, maybe. And sure enough, there was a site called Snot Girls, and they had all kinds of pictures of women were picking their nose, nude women, like topless, so you knew it was sexual. And they, you know, they were, it was gross to me, but yet it was a pay site. And so that tells you there's at least two guys, right? It's not just two guys who threw up the site. There's enough people paying customers to pay the guy's hosting bill. And so, you know, again, that's the kind of thing that contributes to my just kind of like general, wow, that's fascinating. What next?
Well, I was, and, you know, I wanted to ask you, has there ever been anything that absolutely stumped the Playboy Advisor?
No, I wouldn't use the word stumped. I think some of them I'm not going to answer. I have in the book on the last page like 12 letters that just, you know, were so outrageous or strange that they really were trying to get in, but they didn't make it. And the one I remember offhand is, you know, the woman writing, because it had everything, it had every taboo in it, you know, the woman writing and saying, wanting to know how to tell her husband that she was pregnant, but she was pregnant with her 20-year-old son. And so, but what struck me about the letter wasn't the incest. Like, the incest wasn't a concern for her. She wasn't asking me, like, isn't this terrible? I got pregnant with my 20-year-old son. She was concerned, like, how to tell her husband. And, you know, there's no good way. There's no good way to tell him, show him this letter, you know. I mean, like, there's no good way to tell a guy that. Because it's a double whammy for the husband. Not only am I cheating on you, I'm pregnant, and you're going to be a grandpa. So that's when that's why I say stumped isn't the right word, because it's more like, well, I'm not. That's not a general interest question.
I do try to include
questions that kind of, you know, there's a few in there that are very specialized, but most of them I try to make that will have more than 10 people interested in it.
I think this last page is actually, I mean, if you buy the book for no other reason, folks, buy it for the last page. Listen to this. Number two, I've had several nervous breakdowns. Obviously, I can't be an astronaut or an airline pilot, but could I be a lawyer?
That one I could have answered.
Number three.
You're overqualified. Don't read them all now. Don't read them all. You're supposed to tease this, right?
One more. Can a human catch any animal venereal diseases? I own a large dog, and I was on my knees and elbows, naked, searching for a CD when.
Yeah. Ouch. That's in my head for the rest of the night, that image. It took me 2 years to get over that letter. I've had some doozies. I had a letter that's not in there, but a guy wrote me. I cannot remember what prompted this letter or prompted him to do this, but he sent me Polaroids of his erection, and he painted it purple with nail polish. And so you can imagine, I'm opening the letter and going, "What the?" In the name of, you know, and there was some long justification. I discussed something about erection, and he was showing me that they could be fun. But I have that. I saved it because I couldn't really. I didn't know what to do with it.
Of course you did. What else would you do with it?
Well, I wanted her P for purple penis, so then I could find it.
Yes, this isn't from the same page, but this is fun too. Somebody wrote in and said, "Is there such a thing as 3D porn?" And you said, "Sure, open your eyes during sex."
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I, you know, that came to me because there is 3D porn. It's very, you can find it online. And the guy had sent me, I talked to one of the producers. They had made a couple films, and he sent me these glasses, and I tried it. You know, and I was just watching it, going, "This looks like." Except for these hot, you know, having three hot women there, it kind of looks real. And then I had the thought, well, heck, I could, you know, if you're having sex, it looks real. So I guess I'd rather have sex than 3D. So, you know. But, yeah, it's a lot of fun. I mean, one of my other favorites was the guy who wrote in and said he wanted to know if it was normal to or okay to masturbate with boxing gloves on. And I was pondering it, you know, it's a lot of fun. Like you said, it is the greatest job in America, because I'm sitting at my desk kind of pondering what I'm going to tell this guy. And I just thought, well, knock yourself out. And so that's what I told him. And I thought, that's the perfect response. You know, what else can I say? Whatever turns you on, it doesn't matter to me. And, you know, nobody's getting hurt. So
you're 41 years old, and you've been doing this now about 14 years, I think.
Right.
Can anything top this? What does the Playboy Advisor yearn to do next?
When I got this job, I felt like I'd been not like a AAA player pulled up to the big show, but like I was a guy in high school junior who'd never played baseball who got pulled into the show, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I went from 1A baseball to the show, and that's really what I felt like. I was like, this can't be happening to me. This is like the best job I could imagine having. Because, you know, and people say to me, what qualifies you to do this, to be, you know, a sex expert and answer all these questions? And I'm not a doctor. My higher degree is in journalism, which I think is key to this job because I don't know it all, and nobody who does this job would claim to know it all but I know how to find people. I know how to find people whose life is devoted to scotch. And you know people like this. I mean, they have a passion for a very specific topic, and cigars and scotch, and it exists in sex too. I mean, there's experts in every area of sexuality, and the fun part for me is finding them and getting an answer to something that I've wondered about myself. And so many of the advice columns that you read, it's just the person kind of looking at the ceiling and going, here's what I think. And, you know, I do that sometimes, but it's more like an etiquette question or a relationship question where I'm pulling from my own experience or having read thousands and thousands of letters and kind of knowing what other people have gone through. And just sometimes saying to the person, I get thousands of letters with this problem, I think is reassuring to people, you know, that you're not alone. This is very common. But I think that's, to me, what keeps it interesting and why I've been able to do it so long and why my predecessor, Jim Peterson, did it for 22 years. Was that every month you really, as if you're a curious person, it's great to read, you know, pick those 20 letters and kind of think, I'm gonna find the best answer possible. And every month I talk to some just fascinating people who do really interesting things that you wouldn't even know. And it can be not just sex, like the guy who repairs speaker cones, you know, and how, you know, they can fix your beautiful speakers that you had from the 70s, they can fix them for $50, you know, and that's kind of interesting to me. Maybe I'm a geek, a nerd, a pervert, all kind of mixed into one.
but I'm not sure. Did you answer the question? Is there another job? Is there something you still want to?
No, I
can
can't
you do this
anything.
Another 20 years?
I think I could. I think I could. And I, you know, the difference, Jim got burned out. I think the difference is the discussion, which we talked about at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't do a lot of that where people would criticize him or disagree and he would run that letter because he was kind of moving on. You know, he just felt like he told me, I said, why don't you run more? This is a kind of a good letter. Why don't you run this? And he's like, I've moved on. That was months ago. I'm on to a new topic, you know. And I always kind of liked it. I always thought it was very interesting and the discussion was it also didn't set me up as – I didn't want to present myself as the all-knowing kind of, you know, this is it, take it or leave it, because that just isn't a good attitude. I don't think people appreciate that. And so that is kind of what keeps it interesting too, is that I really love getting the feedback, even when it's negative, because it isn't – a lot of these topics are fascinating to me. And, you know, like I just answered a question yesterday where – a guy wrote in and said, you know, what happens when you come across two people having a fist fight? I mean, should you step in? Should you break it up? Do you have an obligation to do that? What if you don't know them? What if it's a friend involved? You know, this kind of thing. So I could just give my answer, you know, which I think what I think you'd do. But instead, I looked around and I found a guy who was a black belt, but also an attorney. And he has a site where he's an expert witness in cases where fights get out of hand. Because a lot of times, like, guys who know karate will devastate somebody, and then the guy who they hit will sue them. you know, and so it becomes a big deal. And so he was telling me the strategy that, you know, when you step in, if it's a friend, step in facing the friend so that, you know, you're not, it's clear you're protecting him and, you know, that kind of stuff, rather than holding him. Because if you hold him, you make him vulnerable to be hit. And so you also don't want to grab the other guy, because then the other guy is 2-on-1, and now you are legally culpable because you're holding the guy while he gets punched. So you're, you know, so it's very interesting to me to have this conversation. I've never thought about it, but yet it was a very interesting perspective, and I was glad to be able to share it with a reader, you know, because it's more than just somebody going, well, I would always step in with a friend, but if it's not a friend, forget it, you know. That's just
interesting. Yeah, but I think you missed an opportunity, Chip.
Okay.
I think you missed an opportunity. I think what you should have written is, first, find the guy masturbating with the boxing gloves.
Yeah, and borrow one of them. Because he only needs one. He only needs one, right? Use the wall. You could put use the wall and the boxing glove and have the same effect.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're so good. You're good. You know, if I ever decide that I want to retire, you just wait by the phone.
Sign me up. I'm in. I would definitely envy that job. There's not a lot of full-time jobs in journalism. I'm very happy freelancing and doing this. But you know what?
What would I do next, Bob? What would I do? I mean, that's the problem, where if I get another job, I'd go in and say, you know, what are you good at? Well, do you have any personal questions you want to ask me? You know,
well,
I don't think there's a hell of a lot of jobs like that. So I'm glad to have it.
Chip, you're gonna laugh when I tell you this, but you know what I think? You know what I think the next job from this would be for you?
What's that?
When that horrible, sad day comes when Hef is not with us anymore, and the magazine needs an out front guy, it's you.
You think?
I do.
But he's got two sons and they're grooming.
I don't mean you're gonna be the father to the. To the two boys and Christy, I just mean...
No, they're going to take over. They're the young halves, man.
Yeah,
they look
but
like him. They're ready to go.
Well, yeah.
I'd be happy. I love the magazine, and it's just a great... I mean, this sounds like an advertisement, I know, but it is a great place to work. It's hard to imagine another place that's so laid back, and I have conversations at work that would get me fired elsewhere. But, you know, it's fun to kind of, I get a question where a guy's saying, what do women think of this? I love going around the office and kind of gathering opinions from the women in the office, what they would do and whether this would freak them out or creep them out or whatever. So there's a little committee work going on, and I think people have a lot of fun thinking about the issues. And you know, this stuff comes up all the time in relationships. And so I don't know. Yeah. It's a great job. There's no doubt. You know, I only have bad days when I do. It is hard to start the column, like when I have to sit down. Like next week, I have to start doing November's column, and I always kind of hesitate and procrastinate because I know it's a lot of work. It's going to take me a couple weeks of research and interviews and kind of editing. But once I get started, it's so much fun. You know, I get on a roll and I have all these phone messages lined up and I'm talking to these interesting guys and I'm interviewing them, I'm thinking in my head, oh my gosh, this is great, this is great, you know, this is going to be really fun, and so then I have a great time for the next 2 weeks, and, you know, and of course, answering the mail is a challenge. The more I get, the farther behind I get, but, and I also can have conversations with people, Bob, that's what's interesting, by email, because before, you know, I can write them back and ask them questions, and get clarification by email, and that helps round out the question, you know, and also sometimes there's just a lot of unanswered questions about, have you told him this? Have you said, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm. I could certainly see the appeal. I mean, seriously, of what you do, and that it's very broad and balanced. I mean, that's what I like about doing the Mr. Media Show. I get to talk to all sorts of people about all sorts of things, and you know, I mean, your background is in journalism. You do a lot of that. It's just, you know, you learn something new every day with these different people.
Besides the show and the few general interest magazines, there really isn't a lot of general interest publications or stuff out there. Everything's really focused now because that seems to be how people can make money. I mean, the general interest is really a challenge.
Well, I've just got a couple last things to ask you about. You've been real patient. I know your wife and kids are probably wondering why we can't see Daddy, you know. Well, it's 11 o'clock. You're in New York. It's a little late, but...
yeah, they're all asleep.
okay. All right. So you got to see him for a little bit. I was thinking, for some reason, I had been thinking that you were still in Chicago. So, all right. So let's wind down here. First of all, Viagra or Cialis?
Ooh, that's a tough question. I mean, you know, Cialis has the advantage of not having to plan. You know, you don't have to take it during dessert at the restaurant and then hope that something,
yeah.
The problem I have with both of those drugs, to be honest, is if you watch television and they show these ads, the guys are always our age. They're always 40.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of doctors now are using erections as a gauge for general health. In other words, if a guy goes in and he's 60 and he's having trouble having an erection, they don't just give him Viagra and say, here you go. Because often mm-hmm. it's a sign of cardiovascular problems, diabetics, you know, diabetes, nerve damage. There's all these other issues that could be coming up, and they're starting to say, hang on a second, we're not just going to give them the Viagra or the Cialis. But you watch the ads on TV, and the guys are all like 40. And my response watching the ads is frustration now, and every time it comes on, my wife says, okay, you know, because I start a little rant. But I'm like, you need to go to the doctor if you can't have an erection, you're 40. There's something going on. I mean, that's not, you know, the Viagra is not going to solve the problem. You're going to drop dead of a heart attack at 45. And so that's my general take on that stuff that, you know, it's great. It's revolutionized sex for people, the older people, people having aging issues, but it also has made men it's a sign of something. There's trouble, and you need to find out why, what's the underlying problem before you just take the pill and pop one.
All right.
So to speak.
Fair enough.
Okay.
All right. One more. Well, I got two more. Next question. I noticed that your your official photo on the Playboy website
mm-hmm.
is the same photo that it was 11 years ago when I interviewed you for Mr. Media.
Yeah.
Come on. What are we talking? Is it vanity? Is it laziness?
Hair,
what's the deal?
It's hair. The hair is gone. So I'm trying to – I should put a photo that's like 5 years even older than that up there. No, that's just it's just laziness. They have other photos of me, and I just have to write the PR people to get a newer one. Because I do look better. I mean, I have gotten better looking with age. I know a lot of guys don't, but for some reason, I'm getting better and better looking, which is hard because it makes the marriage hard. I do get hit on constantly. This is the fantasy part of the program. Yeah, it is the same photo. That's funny you noticed that, though, because I've noticed it, too, and I'm like, I probably should get an updated. Maybe use color, because they have color photos now.
Color, I understand. Yeah, the color
yeah.
is in wide use this
year. Yeah.
well,
and the glasses are smaller. I think I have big honker glasses on that are bigger than my, you know, half my face on there.
I'm just trying to show what incredible research I and my crack staff do for every program that we do.
Yeah, no, it's good. You go on, so you go online and look at a web page. That's a lot.
All right, cut it out now. Come on now. see if you get invited back before another 11
yeah,
years.
Yeah, right. I'll get invited back in 20 years now.
Good. all right, Smarty. Then you have to answer this final question.
Okay.
Are erections larger under a full moon?
unfortunately, they're not, no. If only the tides and the erections were on the same schedule. You know, that's an interesting – I mean, that's an endless topic. I could go on about that forever because that's a huge insecurity with men. And they want to know – I mean, besides the threesome and the definite desire, that's probably the third most common. Although I got to say, I get a lot less than I used to, and I don't know if that's just – the Internet's got a lot of naysayers on it about it. But, you know, guys wanting to know how to – what pills, what surgery. And if it was just the moon, that would be great. It'd be so easy. You'd also see, like, you'd never be able to get a restaurant reservation on a full moon because all the guys would be, you know, asking women out on that night to impress them. And so the movie theaters would be full, and, you know. But there is, you know, I think this is important, and this is, it's a simple answer to that question. There is no way to increase the size of your penis. There's no pill. The surgery that's done doesn't increase the size of your erection. It only, it's, they cut the ligament inside your penis is actually like, if an average penis is 5 to 6 inches, it's actually like 9 inches because you've got 2 or 3 inches inside your body. So they go in and they cut that ligament that holds your penis at full staff, you know, full mast when you have an erection. Most guys, it goes up a little bit. That muscle that they cut, and so they pull the muscle, they pull the penis out an inch or so, but it's only larger when you're soft, when you're flaccid, not when you're hard. So guys who want this surgery are really only doing it to show off in the locker room to other men. They're not concerned with the pleasure of their partner. They're not concerned with that. It's about being, you know, somehow feeling that that's going to make them more of a man. So that's crazy. And so there's a, and every time I say this in the magazine that there's no way to do it, I get all these letters from guys who say, "Well, I did it. I hung weights on my penis for 6 months, and it's now a quarter. You know, it's a quarter inch longer, and I jelked." They have a, you know, it's Arabian jelking, and jelking is basically you take, you know, you masturbate, you tug on your penis without masturbating. You just keep tugging on it, you know, daily for months and months and months, and you gain, you know, a half inch. That it's just, that's nuts. It's craziness. Most men who think they're small are not small. And even if you have technically micro penis, which is 2.5 inches or more or less, it's like a 2.5 inch erection is micro penis. That's when a doctor would say, you know, you have an abnormal or unusually small penis. You can still get somebody pregnant with that size. So it's not abnormal in the sense of you can reproduce. It's not unnatural. And so I tell guys, you know, they have done studies where doctors have measured, because Kinsey in the 50s had self-reports. Guys would measure their own erections and report. And so, of course, there was a little exaggeration there. But more in the 90s, they had a lot of studies where doctors and nurses have measured erections, you know, in groups of 50 guys or whatever, and found 5 to 6 inches, you know, there's a range. But that's basically the average, and that only about 2% of men are 7 inches or more. So, you know, that'll get the job done. And most women, it doesn't affect their pleasure. It's girth that's more important for penetration. And intercourse, during intercourse, the clitoris is not being directly stimulated by your penis anyway. So, you know, unless you're giving her direct stimulation to the clitoris with a tongue or a finger, your penis size doesn't matter to most women in that situation. So I try to just say that over and over and over, but yet it's a very strong insecurity for a lot of reasons with men. And I just like to say, look, I'm average. I'm average. Mm-hmm. That's all, you know, and I'm happy with it.
Well, folks, I want to just point out that, I'm skipping right over that because talking about, you know, penises and erections in general, but then talking about the size of yours in particular, I don't need to go there.
Well, I'm just giving you a range, Bob. I'm just giving you a range. Okay?
That's fine.
It's not, I don't get specific. I'm just saying. I'm not, I don't have a large penis. I think it takes a lot of courage to say that. I do not have a large penis. I don't need it, though. I don't need it because I got skills.
Me.
I got
skills. There you go. Well, listen, if you can't say to your wife, you're not going to find somebody with greater skills and knowledge about this than me, who can? You know, I mean, you know.
Yeah, that's true. She rolls her eyes, though. She rolls her eyes.
She's
not convinced yet. I got a lot of work to do.
I say, well, you know, as soon as we get off the phone, you can get started.
Yeah, that's right. I bring a lot of toys home for her that, you know.
Next time I think I need to get her on the phone. I think
that
might be the next.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Well, I want to point out that the full moon question and most of the questions that I've kind of sprung on you actually come from Chip's book, Dear Playboy Advisor, Questions from Men and Women to the Advice Column of Playboy Magazine, which you can order probably at any bookstore in the country, except maybe in some southern states, or you can order it at MrMedia.com or Amazon.com. And folks, Chip Rowe, the Playboy Advisor, my guest of this long late night show, is only human, but he will answer all reasonable questions from fashion, food and drink, stereo and sports cars, to dating dilemmas, taste and etiquette. And the most interesting and pertinent questions will be presented in the column each month. You can actually send him an email. You don't even have to subscribe to the magazine, although I recommend it. You can send him an email by visiting his website at playboyadvisor.com.
And Chip, and I'm about 3 weeks behind right now, so it'll take a while.
All right.
I'm trying
give him a chance.
Give him a week, Chip, or so, yeah.
You know, we correspond by email from time to time, and always a pleasure to talk to you, and I just really want to thank you for taking the time today on Mr. Media.
Well, I appreciate it. It was a lot of fun. You asked about four questions, I think, but you just have to say a word like penis, and I talk for a half an hour.
God, all right, next time I'm going to say vagina, and then let
you
go.
Oh, don't get me started.
Listen, it was really good to have you on. And
hey, thanks a lot.
Tell my wife I appreciate all your time this evening.
Okay, I will.
Have a great night.
Okay, you too.
All right, bye-bye, Jim. So, folks, for dozens more celebrity and media newsmaker interviews, surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. That's where you can listen to my conversations with the stars, writers, and producers of Heroes, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Army Wives, 24, Big Bang Theory, Pearls Before Swine, Tell Me You Love Me, The Dark Knight, Will Eisner's The Spirit, and even my conversation with Representative Dennis Kucinich. Please think about writing an online review of Mr. Media, casting a vote for me, Mr. Media, well, for me or Mr. Media, or marking Mr. Media as one of your favorites, whether you listen on Blog Talk Radio, Digital Journal, Blueberry, Zencast, Odeo, or iTunes. Thanks so much for joining me tonight. I really appreciate you sharing a piece of your day with Mr. Media. I don't take it for granted, and I hope that you'll join us again real soon. Bye, everybody.